You're listening to the Tongue Tie Experts Podcast, a weekly program providing information and support for those families impacted by tongue and lip tie and the professionals caring for them. I'm Lisa Palladino, a midwife and a lactation consultant with over 30 years of experience. If you are a parent looking for answers or a professional who is curious to learn more than what you learned in school on this topic, welcome. This podcast is for you. Welcome back, everyone, to the Tongue Tie Experts Podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Palladino, and today I have with me the founder and CEO of Hoboken Smile Specialists and Smile Wellness, Dr. Radhika Kapoor. Dr. Kapoor is a New York City native and a New Jersey resident, just like I am, and is a compassionate and accomplished board-certified pediatric dentist who has been dedicated to providing gentle, patient-focused care for children and families. With an extensive background in laser dentistry, early orthodontics, and airway health, Dr. Kapoor blends cutting-edge techniques with a holistic approach to oral wellness. Dr. Kapoor holds a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology and a Doctor of Dental Surgery degree from Columbia University, where she held leadership roles with AAPD and Give Kids a Smile, and was published in the New York State Dental Journal for her research on ectodermal dysplasia. Her pediatric dental residency was completed at the prestigious Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C., where she gained extensive training in treating children with special healthcare needs, sedation dentistry, trauma, and interceptive orthodontics. Inspired by her own challenges nursing a child with a posterior tongue tie, as so many of us are, right? Dr. Kapoor became a pioneer in laser dentistry. She has practiced laser dentistry since 2017, receiving one-on-one training from leaders in the field, including Dr. Martin Kaplan, who we recently had as a guest on the podcast. Her advanced expertise includes the use of the renowned Light Scalpel CO2 laser, which she employs in frenectomy procedures to improve breastfeeding in infants, feeding and airway issues in toddlers, and sleep problems in adults. Dr. Kapoor further advanced her expertise with a surgical fellowship under Dr. Sarus Zaghi, a globally recognized ENT and sleep surgeon known for integrating medicine and dentistry in the field of airway health. She is also trained in early orthodontics under Dr. Mariana Evans, a leader in the field of orthodontics and airway-focused care. As a Breathe Institute affiliate, Dr. Kapoor works collaboratively with other professionals to improve airway health and provide comprehensive care for her patients. She also provides hospital-based dental rehabilitation under general anesthesia at Englewood Hospital for Children who require specialized care. Welcome, Dr. Kapoor, and wow, what a pedigree I just read. You've done so much and trained with leaders in the field, many of whom we mention very often on this podcast. So thank you for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
So that was a long and detailed introduction. And, you know, sometimes I just want to say, like, if I had to ask you, tell me what you do without all of that stuff. Give us a little little summary of what's Dr. Kapoor and what do you do on an everyday basis or in your practice?
You know, it's interesting. I feel like it's evolved for me. I always start with I'm a mom. You know, I'm a mom of two little girls.
Of course.
I'm a daughter. I'm a sister. You know, everything that I've done, my whole basis in the privilege that I have to be doing what I do comes from my family. There was always this encouragement that the role that I had, my mom kind of carved out, was like, you're a caretaker. You don't like seeing people unwell. It bothers you. And there's a lot of history there. And so I'm the only one in my entire family in the healthcare field, and it hasn't been an easy, journey, but it's been a journey that's been the most fulfilling thing, because when someone asks me, what do? I'm like, I work with kids, I work with families, and I get to work on the whole a whole picture and try to put mm-hmm. the pieces together. And I get to do that in a way that's not just, you know, through all this higher education, but it's very real to me because I am also navigating, you know, all of their health journeys and my health journey, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I thought it was very interesting to see your undergrad was psychology because that is unusual for a dental degree. Usually it's bio. Cause I know I was originally pre-med and I was, my degree was bio and I was with a lot of dental, future dental residents or pre-dental students in my program. We were pre-dental, pre-med mixed together in bio. Usually it's bio or chemistry. Yep. So psychology must have laid that groundwork for how you are looking at more than just the mouth at this point, right?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you're treating a person, right? And so when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do in my undergrad, again, I'm not looking at anyone in my family that, oh, one day I want to be a doctor or a dentist. I knew I wanted to know how to relate to people. And the best way to do that is, you know, being put in scenarios. I was doing specifically child development and, you know, family scenarios and trying to see how parents make decisions about their kids. How are they evaluating their proper growth? It was just a very initial kind of understanding that I was developing, but I also went to a women's college. So what I think is like the merging of the two situations helped me understand that there was a bigger picture here where healthcare is so focused on, you know, disease burden and trying to manage all these conditions. But what is forgotten is the mind and mm-hmm. also like the emotion behind it. And that was what was most compelling to me was, is anyone putting those pieces together? Is anyone looking at the fact that even though you might want something for your patient or your client, it's really important to understand as a person and what their family right. dynamics are. And I'm lucky that I generally didn't have an understanding of where my life was heading. And through my peers and my friends, I fell in love with psychology. And honestly, every step that I've taken since then has just been very organic. You know, I knew I had to take the sciences because I wanted to get into healthcare, but I took everything but my required courses. So I took jazz, I took music theory, I took dance. And I think that's what makes it so much more rewarding for me, so that the conversations are less a means to an end and more of like, who are you? Where are you at? And can I be of any help?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I just listening to you and having children who are just past college age, you know, and thinking about, or other people who are thinking about what are their kids going to do? We put so much focus on that direct route to that job, which very rarely happens, right? And you set yourself up to be a well-rounded human before you decided or went into your career, right? So I think that's beautiful. And I'm sure that that addresses or is reflected in the work you do today. And I love how you've evolved because in a similar way I have, and many women that I speak to have evolved in the same way. We didn't start out saying, you know, I didn't wake up when I was 17 and say, I think I'm going to go to school and become a lactation consultant who specializes in tongue tie and has a podcast. If you would have told me that when I was 17, I would have laughed at you, you know? So it's those little decisions that you make, those micro decisions around, along the way that lead you, I feel, to where you're supposed to be. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
I agree.
Because, yeah. Yeah.
And the people you meet along the way is really what shapes, right? Like I'm very spiritual. So for me, I also was like, okay, if I'm going to go to healthcare, I'll be, you know, maybe I'll be in a psychologist or I'll be in neuroscience. I did not suspect I'd be working with my hands. I didn't draw. I wasn't an artist. I didn't play an instrument. And there was just so many things coming at me indicating that this is not going to be the smooth path. I don't have dentists in the family. I don't have doctors in the family. My parents are not even from this country. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was one of those things like I kind of just went into it. And they always say like ignorance is bliss. And I'm glad because honestly, if I didn't have the support of my friends or my family and all the peers and mentors that I've met along the way, I don't think I'd kind of stick it through because it is challenging when you're dealing with people experiencing their own challenges. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I've always been, I want to make it better. But I think that the more I worked on myself, the more I made sure that I was, you know, taking care of myself and my mind and really paying attention to those things and understanding who I am as a person. That's the only way I could bring the best out of me to the people that I meet versus, mm-hmm. you know, take this course and become this kind of provider and become, because if I lose my own sense of humanity, then I can't really do, you know, what this field is about, which is about the human.
Right. Right. So this is a feminine approach that I'm, you know, I'm glad we're talking today. I have to be honest, and I don't want to insult any men in my audience. I know most of my audience is female, but I don't want to insult the men that do listen. But I've had a few interviews in a row of all just guys. And there's, while they're very good at what they do, there's a different approach, I think, that women have to take, because in general, and I'm definitely bringing biases and what our culture is like, but in general, the woman is taking care of the family, taking care of things, even while she's going to school, going to work, doing, you know, developing her career, whereas not so much for the boys. And they're a little bit more focused on the goal. You know, we're a little bit more go with the flow and see what happens and meet whatever. And hearing you talk about self-care is something I want to highlight for all the young women professionals who are listening, because we, if you come to these professions, I have a lot of nurses, IBCLCs, SLPs. We come to this profession, you know, I call it the caring professions. We come with a, like, I just want to help people. But sometimes along the way, these paths are difficult and we forget about taking care of ourselves. You know, I know nursing school was a horror show when it came to self-care. I was lucky I slept, right? And yeah. Midwifery, the whole other thing about being on call and sacrificing your sleep and being there for everyone all the time. And sometimes we have to step back and say, who am I bringing to help this healing relationship with the patient if I can't take care of myself? Then, you know, you're pouring water from an empty cup, right? So thank you for highlighting the importance of self-care and explaining that to people, because I think that's more important than talking about the intricacies of caring for tongue tie is who are we as people, you know, yes. And who are we as professionals? IBCLCs are, they work hard, you know, it's not an easy profession, especially those who are like traveling from place to place, making home visits and, you know, spending a lot of time with families at their most vulnerable times. It's not an easy thing. And we have to remember that if we're not taking care of us, we're not going to be able to help anyone else.
It's true, because what happens is, at least for me, there was a, transformation that really occurred. Residency was like, you know, get beat up, be told you're never mm-hmm. going to amount to anything. You don't sleep. You're always on call. You're seeing very sick kids in a children's hospital. I had never met a well child, because all the kids that needed dental care in my residency were on the floors, right? They either were cancer patients, hematology patients, and they're all immunocompromised. And I remember being in residency, and this is like the age where, you know, I'm also like dating and I wanted to get married and I wanted really, I've always wanted to have babies. I'm like the eldest of three. And,
me too.
I was just an obsession.
See, we have a lot in common.
I really wanted to start a family, and I was spooked because I just thought that, you know, all the exposure that I had was kind of starting to get in, to make me fearful of the kind of parent I would be. Would I be able to manage work? And, you know, how would I have kids? Or I see so many kids with these chromosomal issues. Like, what if that's going to be me? And it was. I did have a struggle. I had a lot of issues. I'm trying to start a family. But what I did realize, and again, this comes from, you know, you could probably see in my camera, like on the background, is that's my grandma, late grandma. And I keep her picture there because I call her my fierce backup. Like, you know, I start my day praying to her. Every course, everything I do, I always like, you know, talk to her. And I say that because she's like, go back out there. Why are you sitting there crying? And I think it was because I was like, well, if I show vulnerability, then I'm a woman in the field. If I show that I'm, you know, providing self-care, then I'm selfish in the field. If I look like I'm successful, then it looks like I must be just killing it, you know? Or if I look like I'm not successful, then there must be something wrong with me. And at some point she goes, you're doing it for you or you're doing it for them? And, you know, it stuck with me. And then when mm-hmm. she passed during COVID, I basically made a promise to her that I can't do anything for anybody else and only myself, including my family, my children, my parents. And it's because that's my purpose. And I strongly believe that I have a purpose. And, you know, everyone's going to have those moments where they feel like imposter syndrome. Am I doing an amazing job? Am I helping every family? But I find going to work, honestly, my husband goes, oh my God, I really hope you have patience today. Get out of the house, because I start getting very anxious if I'm not in my zone, and it's therapeutic. Yeah. And I don't care, frankly, if I look like that I have emotion or not, because when it comes to doing my work, I am very good at it and I am very focused. And, you know, I remember Dr. Kaplan, when he was training me and coaching me from the very beginning, I went to every course that he was at, because I felt like he was not only a pediatric dentist mentor, he was a personality and someone to really just look up to. How do you balance happiness? Like, how do you bring joy to what you do? And I was feeling a lot of the professionals, I felt drained, and I needed to look to someone to be like, there has to be someone who's happy in this field. That's not staring at the loans and the reviews, because we know that's all there, but I need to stay focused. And he's like, you don't want a parent in the room because you'll cry because a mom is crying. Just tell the mom. Just tell her that you cry when you see a parent crying. She could stare at you from the outside, but as long as you have attention with the baby, that's fine. You know, and I find that over time, the more I became as transparent and truthful with my patients, what I can do, what I can't do, what I'm working on, what I'm evolving, the right people that were meant to come into my life have, whether it was a mentor or a client or a family. And I'm fine with that. I'm actually more than fine with that. I'm humbled by it, because nobody else that I know, at least in my small circle of friends and family, get to get up every day where someone puts so much trust in whatever I'm able to provide for this family, procedure or no procedures. They've stepped in my door. And like, again, the way I'm raised is they come into your door, it's like coming into your home. That's it. Respect, values, you have to do that. Like, they don't have to come to see you. And right. I think that humility sometimes could get me in that zone of doubting myself in a very, even female dominated or male dominated, whatever you want to call it. It's like this energy right now with social media, and you just kind of always feel you're underperforming. But I'm glad I keep her next to me, because she's like, you can't be arrogant about this. You're not trying, who are you trying to impress other than yourself? And that's what grounds me.
Right. That's beautiful. And what an inspiration. And I'm sorry for your loss. That's a recent loss for your grandma, and she must have been a wonderful inspiration to have in your life up to that point, which I also have a very close spiritual relationship with my maternal grandma, who's gone for a really long time. But there's something about the maternal line. And I was just having this conversation with my daughter the other day about how silly it is that in our culture, we pass down the male name, and there's no tracing of the female heritage, realistically, because like, I just had a granddaughter, and I have a grandson, and I love him to pieces. He's the best. But there was something magical about my daughter carrying her daughter and then meeting her. Like, I feel this connection, and it goes back through. Like, I'm thinking about all the strong women in my background. I also come from on that side a little bit earlier in my heritage, immigrants and strong immigrants who came here. My great grandmother came here from Syria in 1917 or about, with three children by herself. Wow. Her husband passed. He was killed in the war, and she emigrated here by herself with three little ones. A new country, not speaking the language. Like, we have such heritages that are built into our maternal lines that don't get recognized in our name, right? So it's kind of weird. But anyway, we digress. This is not the typical conversation, but I'm sure that people who are listening will enjoy this conversation and be inspired by it, you know? So let's talk about what exactly, all of your training and education and life experiences has culminated in your practice, which is not very far from me in New Jersey. We're both in New Jersey now. We're both from New York, and we both now live in New Jersey. Tell me about your practice. Tell me about what's your ideal client? What people you tend to find that come to you? Yep. And I do believe we find the people, right? The people will find you that need you. You know, that's definitely for sure. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So my first practice was a Book and Smile Specialist, which is, you know, I essentially was leading a pediatric dental office that I found, you know, what was comfortable for me. It's routine pediatric dentistry, prevention, but a large part of it was managing the fact that there are a lot of kids with decay. And, you know, it was a lot more treatment focused. And as I was starting my training on tethered oral tissues and working with lactation consultants, and that started to grow, I decided to develop a niche within that practice. And I realized very soon that I couldn't practice traditional pediatric dentistry alongside more of this holistic, personalized dentistry, just because I needed to always be on the phone with lactation and therapists that were referring to me. I needed a room for my parents to stay afterward. It felt like it was almost something on the side, and I couldn't really find the connection with my, you know, pediatric dental patients that were coming in as toddlers and older children who may or may not have been, you know, addressed as infants with feeding issues, but they were kind of presenting with similar issues. And I didn't know what to describe it. It was only after lecture and course and meeting amazing people. I was like, oh, like, these are actual oral myofunctional disorders. I know how to diagnose cavities. I know how to diagnose, you know, issues with growth. But I started to deep dive that everyone keeps coming in with issues, but no one's talking about how we can get to the root cause. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one thing led to the other, where whether it was COVID, finances, my own ethical kind of journey, I decided to kind of scrap that way of practicing and become a solo, holistic dentist and open up Smile Wellness in 2022, shortly right after COVID, because I found that I couldn't find the way to practice without making sure my team was aligned. And when I was, you know, having this traditional pediatric dental practice, it was kind of all over the place. I couldn't really focus and key in on seeing kids in less volume and looking at the whole picture rather than these 8 to 10 minute appointments, counting teeth, checking for cavities. It was a regurgitation of like fill and drill. And I needed an hour to just, you know, establish what kind of child this is, where can the family, because the other thing what was happening is the pediatrician model generally in our area is that typical 5 to 7 minutes you have with the MD, longer time with the nurse. And it's very, you know, preventive based in the sense of like your vaccines and here's your evaluation of growth. But there are holes in those discussion. And a lot of those holes would be like, is my kid, is this normal? Like, is it, you know, I had my own kid, so they'd ask me like, do your kids have picky eating? Do your kids have issues with like the sleep? Like, why doesn't she sleep all the night, you know, all the time? And as I was kind of seeing these kind of patients coming to see me, my own daughter, you know, was suffering from sleep apnea. And so I just took it upon myself that whatever was occurring with my children, the dismissals I was facing, I didn't want my office to kind of transpire in the same way. And that is how we've evolved. I did, my fellowship with Dr. Zaghi, and I started to go, you know, extremely deep into that world of airway, essentially because I found things happening in the field. There were releases being done, tongue tie surgeries. But again, there was no zoomed out lens of like, what happens with this child once this procedure is over? Where's that continuity of care? And am I going to be available to answer all those questions if I'm doing traditional dentistry and counting teeth and drill and fill? I wouldn't.
I like how you say like the zoom out and what happens then. You know, I often talk about the silos that we learn in, you know, different parts of the body have different professionals that take care of them, you know, but it's also the silo of age, right? Like we don't have continuity. Yes, the pediatrician, but the pediatrician, as you said, most of the time is just checking their boxes. You know, I had the experience of a family member went to a primary care doctor. And she said, how come every time I come in, they ask me the same questions and they're going, I know what they're doing. They have the checklists about mental health. They have the checklists about sexual activity. They have the checklists about, do you smoke? You know, all the boxes that we have to check, and we don't ever get to just look at the the person and say, yeah. How are you?
No.
Right. And it's sad. And it's to a point, not anybody's fault, but to a point it is, because if people like you and I can say, yeah. Wait, I have to look deeper. Everybody should have that capacity.
And there's no empowering. I mean, I feel like I learned this from IBCLCs and SLPs the most, where I was like, we're all working on similar individuals. Mm-hmm. Then why am I practicing differently? Why am I looking for something to do to you? Right. That's where I was feeling my training. Do you have a string? Should I cut it? I'm going to save your life. Versus like, how are you as a family? How is everything in terms of your goals? Do you feel like you have a good handle of what growth and development should look like? What are the tools you need to know that you should be seeing a dentist as your primary oral specialist as an infant? You know, so, you know, I get really kind of, now they know, don't call my office for a tongue tie consult. Please don't. It's okay. Don't refer for that. But if you're going to establish a dental home at the age where I feel like it's appropriate, where you start using your mouth to eat and your nose for breathing, please, I would love to be part of that. How does mom take care of our oral health? How does she make sure she doesn't transfer any, you know, disease-causing bacteria to the baby? What are they doing about prevention? So like I have, you know, after this consultations, and the whole family gets screened. And they know they're not getting screened for a string, because I'm like, I may find one, I won't. Depends on who sent me the baby and what report they're sending and what function they found was dysfunctional. But for me, it's, I love being a pediatric dentist. I love going back to the home of where I started. I knew where I belonged. And now I have all these additional kind of lenses that I've trained on to provide more of a comprehensive scope and plan for these families. Are like, this, my goal is, if I see you as an infant or a toddler or even older child, I don't want you to be back in the dental chair for any more dental work in the future. That is my goal. Mm-hmm. So if I can see you early enough, and if you're a parent, how can I give you tools to empower you to feel the same way? Because frankly, back to my psychology kind of background, everyone's scared of the dentist.
Yes.
Everyone is scared.
Yes.
And funny enough, my random project that I didn't even touch on was working out of a psychiatrist in Hackensack, and she was doing EMDR, which is like, you know, this eye movement desensitization therapy for women who were traumatized in the dental chair.
Wow.
How I landed this, I think my dad helped me call, you know, back in the day, it was like no Google. I think we called through a directory, Yahoo. I think there was a Yahoo, and we were looking, and he's like, you need to shadow. I can't be picking you up. I'll drop you. You need to do an internship. Otherwise, you're not going to get into any schools if you're really into psychology. And I'm telling you, the concept of women feeling, you know, a certain way, even when people come into my office, like their mouths are kind of just like, oh, like there's a living room in the waiting room. She doesn't even put kids like crazy, like wait, like there's not a lot of stimulation, because I wanted to feel like I've invited you for dinner, right?
Right.
It's like, surprise, here's my therapy room, and there's no dental chair or tools, because also helps me stay in my, you know, in my zone of no energy that I need to pick up on that. And so I think that for me and my, at this practice, it's the typical client coming in is coming for what they are assuming is a dental visit, but I'm looking at it completely from head to toe and family history and deep diving to make a care plan. And everyone's care plan is custom, and it's not a one size fits all. And a lot of the parents' biggest things they'll say is, wow, I'm happy I left. And I already know you can brush your teeth twice a day. They know so much already with all the information out there. For me, it's always like, what more can I provide where it's like customized to your family and a little bit more thought to how all of these pieces work together to really kind of drive home that it's in their right to be able to guide their kids and their own health journeys.
Mm-hmm. And being proactive and in charge of their own destiny and their own children's destiny, which we so often give away our autonomy to our medical or dental providers. Like, well, that's what they said I had to do, you know, and I'm like, wait, you know, I recently had an ER visit with my niece who I raised like my daughter, and she was having a very uncomplicated UTI, a urinary tract infection, but she needed immediate care just to make sure that's what it was. And they came in saying, oh, we're going to give you this IV antibiotic and then we'll send you home. And I was like, wait a minute. Why would we give her an IV antibiotic that's going to cover everything before we know what the strain is? right? Kill all the bacteria, good, bad, and ugly in her body, and then send her home on a different antibiotic. I'm like, let's not do that. And she was like turning all kinds of shades of color because I was, you know, being a Bedinsky, as I said, you know, I was like, I'm going to, and after she left, the nurse left the room, I explained to her and she was like, that makes sense. But, and this is a well-informed, confident young woman who was sitting there like, oh, the doctor said I have to take this.
Yep.
And just taking it. And yep. That's how we were raised. That's the tradition. You know, I could tell so many stories. My mother-in-law, like just listening to a doctor blindly.
Yeah.
Even when it doesn't make sense to her because the doctor said. But we have to bring our autonomy and our sense of being in charge of ourselves back to our patients. I think it's the role of people like you and me to do that. And even in my tongue tie teaching, that's what I say to parents. And this has evolved from way back when I started. It's not you have to get this fixed. It's this is what you need to learn about it so that you can make an informed decision because only you know what's best for you and your family.
Yes.
And no, not to have that. People feeling like there's something that they have to do or else.
Yes.
Yeah, because we don't really know the or else.
And I can tell you that was a part. When I'd see infants that were already released and now I see them in my practice as toddlers, the amount of guilt parents have, you know, surrounding what was done and they still have airway issues, they're still picky eaters. I had to kind of bring it down to be like, this is unpredictable regardless. And what happens is sometimes too much empowerment scares professionals because there's so much Instagram and there's Google. What I say is, two things have to happen is you need to empower your parents, but then you also need to make sure there's a consensus and there's a source of collaboration in your own industry so that everyone's on the same page. Because if you have providers kind of feeding into whether it's like, oh, you know, you need to rush to do the surgery. I've identified this. I know for a fact this is a string and needs to be cut, but you're not taking the time to establish a relationship with the provider you're going to send them to and be part of that. Well, now that parent's left hanging, trying to make pieces connect. And I think that's the biggest thing. It's, you know, your scope and I know mine. I can't provide the information that, you know, you can. However, if we work together, the parent's going to try to, you know, they're going to have a firm foundation where they feel like whatever the decision they make, they have a good support system. Right. And what I find often is that parents are doing the due diligence. They're looking for the information. They're seeking it. But they're not understanding that those key players that they're choosing, the most amazing IBCLC, the most amazing surgeon, need to really interact and follow it through. Because if they don't, the parents are then stuck again at square one, trying to find answers themselves. And it is a continuity. You know, that's the other thing. If you don't evolve the way you practice in this field and you think, you know, once a procedure is done, you're done with that, then you kind of stay in the zone of that's how you practice. But unfortunately, there's a larger picture to be had. You know, when we start trying to tie everything together, like for me, I have autoimmune issues and my 7-year-old, she had UTIs and kidney issues and almost went under the knife after, you know, me seeing two urologists. And thank God the third urologist was like, oh no, she's just behaviorally, you know, retaining and this is what's causing her infections. I mean, that's a big deal. And so I think having the time and energy and also the stamina, because not everyone's going to want to listen, and that's okay, where you make it your mission as a person who's treating other human beings, that you get the time and energy to work with the entire team, you know, and make sure you follow through in what's happening. Because I feel like the newer generation is becoming more and more, you know, savvy of where to find their resources, but they are still looking for direction. And the biggest feedback I get from families is like, well, whenever we have a question, we feel like we could call your office, but not the person who referred to us, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's interesting to me because there should be a loop that feels closed for that family, you know?
Yes. And also I think that the collaboration between us as professionals gives an additional layer of trust to the family. You know, I feel so sad when a family gets mixed messages, and often it's between myself and the pediatrician or another IBCLC or someone who's willing to do something differently than I suggested, and not, and I can't communicate with that person because of doors closed to me, you know, yeah. And there are doors closed to me, you know, yeah. There's a lack of respect with a lot of providers to an IBCLC. They just don't recognize us, you know, and on top of that, I'm a midwife, which just makes me, you know, really on the outskirts, unfortunately, which shouldn't be, but that's right. Still that, you know, underlying, oh, she's one of those midwives, you know.
Well, but you said it's finding, they find you, but now yeah. I become more like, this is the team I work with. When I was doing craniofacial work at Children's, and I was like, you know, I had my ENT, I had my ortho, I was mm-hmm. ready to use this concept. And mm-hmm. I was almost spoiled, right? And now I've determined that, you know, I'm okay if I don't work with every single XYZ therapist. I need the teams and these demographics to be consistent. And they all need to be practicing in a similar fashion where they're hearing the goals of the family. And there needs to be a, you know, complete trust that if someone sends me a family, that I don't wheel out my laser the minute I see a human being in my office. Right. It's tucked right. away in a closet. And there's a reason for that, is because I don't assume every consultation is going to end up in a procedure. And I think that's right. extremely important, because, you know, with pediatric dentistry, you kind of, you're ready right. thinking that every consultation is going to need a release, and you're kind of, you know, amped up, and you're like, this is what this day is going to be. And if I could start getting the mode of teaching, and this is my like mission starting next year, is for pediatric dentists, is take the courses to learn, but try to take a variety of things to learn. Not just how to do procedures and when they might be indicated. Don't forget, this is just another tool in your tool belt after mm-hmm. looking at a whole picture, because if you start, you won't stop seeing ties. You'll see them right. everywhere, and you're going
right.
to,
you can't unsee them.
That's what every person needs. Please zoom out and look at the parent bringing that child in and be aligned in their goals. Because even when the parents are not aligned, even when the referral person who's sending them, you know, they send them to somebody else and now they're in your chair, it's going to create more of a mucky situation. And, you know, I have a lot of respect, you know, tremendous respect with IBCLC's midwife. I had a midwife, I had a doula, but this is just who I am. So that means that's what works for me. For somebody who does not want, you know, a provider like me or an IBCLC, there's going to be someone for them, you know?
Right. For someone who just wants the frenum cut and doesn't need any of the handholding or anything. Yeah. So what's interesting to me is that you talk about education, and, you know, I'm all for interdisciplinary training. I feel like not only should we be communicating as professionals, but we should be learning what each other learns. Because if I don't know what you know, and you don't know what I know and what I've learned, then how do we ever refer out? How do we know who needs what? You know, so I get a lot of slack for letting all professionals in my professional tongue tie course and not just letting it be for IBCLCs. I get a lot of slack for that from IBCLCs who feel like their role is being stepped on. And I will stand on that until I give, you know, until I retire, that we all need to know this information. First of all, we need to be able to talk the same language. We need to be able to talk the same language to parents. We all need to educate families. There is nothing more important than education for our families, so that they are making the decision. And many, many families will never get to see an IBCLC like me. So no. I want them to be met where they are, to be able to refer, to know, like the doula should know, the massage therapist who maybe is doing prenatal massage, that mama might talk to her about her struggles breastfeeding more than she's going to talk to her OB, because she sees her more often, or all these other little, you know, pieces along the way. Of course, the body workers, as we say, the CST providers, the SLPs, of course. I had no idea of an SLP's role in feeding in all of my years working in the hospital. I did not understand it because I never met an an SLP that would explain to me what she did. And really knew, you know, unfortunately I didn't find any good ones where I was working years and years ago.
I think that your course is amazing. When you send it to me, by the way, I've sent it to already so many of my referring providers.
Excellent. Thank you.
And the biggest part of it that I was like, be comfortable when your scope is, you know, in one direction to learn more. So when parents are asking me what position, what bottle type, and what nipple size they should be using, I always say, these are the providers for resources that I look at. Right. If your IBCLC is not talking about it, but bring it up with her in a nice way to be like, this is something my dentist feels like you should know more of. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you're open to feedback, open to exposing that you may not know everything, you will get the trust of the families. Right. And if you try to say that you could do everything, and then that child is left completely dysfunctional and now needs to see seven more providers, a CST, an SLP, and all of these things, you've just created a situation, again, your client, which is an infant, and their entire family, where if transparency was the beginning of the situation, then we wouldn't have what I usually see as dysfunction. And in fact, what instead happens is these parents are routine surgical, they keep finding surgery as a means to an end. So they go from one provider for release and another provider for release and another. And what I always say to the therapist is start with identifying what you feel like may have been missed before that right. initial referral for the release right. and come with a plan that doesn't involve another procedure, because right. often that's not what creates the improvement. It may seem like it, but it often isn't. It's because right. they changed the methodology, you know, of the approach. And I say simple analogies, like I have neck herniations. Sometimes acupuncture works, sometimes chiropractics works, and sometimes, you know, good old rest and relaxation work. And for a kid whose nervous system is dysregulated or they're not feeding, it's not a one size fits all. Right. And I find the best outcomes we've ever had are the therapists who are willing to say, you know what, I was doing PT with this kid and they were working with an amazing IBCLC, but gosh, I feel like craniosacral, like a nervous system approach, something gentler might be the trick. Let's just see how the family feels about it. And boom, there's no right. consumer attachment.
Right. Instead of the repeat procedures, the saddest messages I get on social media is, I released my baby's tongue tie. It didn't work. We did it again. Should I have it a third time? And my head wants to explode, because like that poor baby, that poor family, no other options given to you, you know, and I like to say, we're going to do the exact same thing and expect a different result. Right. And that just doesn't make sense to me.
It's very fearful.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's fear-based. So the parents they're not doing anything wrong. They just don't have any other information.
And I always say it's the only surgery, there's very few of them, where someone can comment because they could physically look at something. And I tell the therapist that, look, you know, you can visually look at something, but unless you were there during the actual surgery, the only comment you can make is that, go back to your provider, I'm concerned right. about healing.
Right.
That's like the most ethical way to describe, because look, you know, the biggest thing I tell dentists especially is we have a code of ethics, right? It's like seeing someone's root canal on an x-ray. If you indicate to them that the root canal was done wrong or needs to be redone, you're in hot water, versus mm-hmm. saying, you know, I feel like you should go to your original provider that did this work. Because right. I'm not comfortable. I'm not comfortable treating this tooth. I think that that's, again, the zoomed out lens. What's happening in my field is, you know, and I talked to LightScalpel, and I only use LightScalpel and CO2 laser specifically, you know, because my first breastfeeding class, by the way, was your class, I think in 2014, when I was trying to have babies and I was trying to meet a doula, and I went with my friend. But that's also when I met Peter from LightScalpel, and I was like, look, is this just because it's sponsored? This is why this laser is here. And I went crazy learning about all the different lasers and the understanding. He goes, don't be jaded by the fact that the laser is amazing. It's still all about you. And I right. say, you know, the newer providers that are coming out, and even some of the ones who are already in the field, we have to align in our vision back to the main story is there's a person, there's a mm-hmm. family, and our generations are evolving. There right. is Instagram, there's Facebook, there's Reddit. There's absolutely no reason people's kids' pictures of wounds should be on the internet.
Right.
There's
right.
absolutely no discussion that a therapist should be having alone about what she feels was a good job versus about, we have a medical and a dental license to protect. And mm-hmm. the only way that's going to happen is if there's a consensus amongst providers. And it will drive down the whole fad concept, that's for sure. Because now mm-hmm. it's like you're talking to your colleague as a colleague who's like, yeah, I agree with you. Like, send them back to me. Do they do right. body work?
Yeah. Something about the pictures, you know, when we see a picture of somebody saying this wasn't done right, you don't know what it looked like before.
I get that. And, so many
and
you know,
and there's so many factors that go into healing and whatever. I mean, maybe it was a crappy job, but that's not for us to say on social media. Absolutely
and
not.
And timing matters. What that baby's position matters. And I get these emotional. Now I'm doing so many second opinions. While I appreciate people looking at me in that way, the biggest thing my staff will say is she's not going to do a same day procedure. So if you're driving 3 hours to come and see me because a provider, you know, did a release and you're finding that your child's mouth breathing and having issues with airway and, you know, that's where I focus, I'm still going to want to talk to your provider that did the release.
Right.
That's just how I practice.
Right.
And I want to understand like what the team was set up and how we can navigate from there, because the last thing I want is and you can't control every outcome or any outcome at all, but at least you can try to provide a better foundation if that was the next approach, you know.
Right. Right. Well, Dr. Kapoor, I've already taken a lot of your time and I know you have a busy day ahead of you. Just to finish up, you know, if there's one thing you want people to know about tongue tie, airway, holistic dentistry, like what's one thing you want to make sure they know before we sign off?
I for the parents listening, it's, you know, I'm doing my best to put as much as I can out there on my social media or YouTube, is being empowered with questions before coming in with what are your goals? How are you aligned on your goals? And there is enough research out there. There's enough on my website and amazing providers where you can start making the connection so you really understand the full picture. And if you don't, seek a consultation. And the consultation, when you're going to be evaluated for holistic health, holistic oral health, is, you know, it can go in any direction that you need it to go in. You know, it doesn't have to be tongue tie specific. And I want parents to be open-minded about that infant oral assessment. It could be game-changing if they really, really understand. It's about looking at the whole picture, setting up your village from the start, and making sure that your child is developing properly. And you need to have the key players to track that. And for the providers is to continue to work on creating a mission that's unified and that's collaborative. That's the biggest thing.
Perfect. Yeah. So, and where can we find you? What is the name of your Instagram and YouTube and all that?
Yes. Smile Wellness Hoboken is our Instagram. Our website is mysmilewellness.com. And our YouTube is Smile Wellness 333.
Perfect. And that will all be in the show notes as well. So Dr. Kapoor, have a beautiful day.
Thank you.
And hopefully we'll talk again soon.
I appreciate you so much. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you too. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Tongue Tie Experts podcast. Check out the show notes for useful links about the topics we discussed and for ways to follow us on social media. Please subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app. And if you enjoyed listening, we'd love it if you'd rate, review, and share with your friends and colleagues. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.